Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge you who may care about or care for or have become someone with a disability. Friday, September 22nd, the American Institute of Medicine released The Future of Drug Safety, and today Joel Lection reports on Canadian implications for the measures recommended in the American report.
Professor Joel Lection, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. There are differences between the two countries, but there are also a lot of similarities. The American approval process is somewhat more transparent than what we have in Canada. But the requirements to get approved are essentially the same in both countries, and the fact that the power of the agencies to control medications ends when they approve them is also similar, so that...
No ongoing control.
That's right, except if there are gross safety issues that come up, they can either require modification in the information or negotiate with the companies to get them removed from the market, but neither country... The agencies have the authority to require or to demand post-marketing safety studies.
I understand in Canada there actually are subtle disincentives to monitoring side effects from drugs. There's no compensation for a doctor to take the time to report something subtle, and in fact there may be a disincentive for him to report something major because it involves his judgment and his treatment.
That's true. I mean, nobody is under any obligation to report except if the drug companies get reports, they have to submit them. But doctors don't have to do it. Doctors often don't recognize side effects. If they do recognize side effects, there is some bureaucracy involved in reporting it. Not an awful lot, but there, as you pointed out, there is no incentive, although I would say that doctors should be reporting as part of just practicing good medicine. But on the other hand, Health Canada doesn't provide any feedback when you do report either. They don't.
Really?
They don't. They'll acknowledge receiving the report, but they don't send you back information about what you reported, whether or not other people have reported the same thing. They don't follow up with you and let you know whether or not they think that what you reported was actually a true side effect. All this, except in cases where it's well recognized. A lot of this is just guesswork. You got a drug today and a week later something happened to you. Well, was that the drug or was that something else? And
right.
So you file the report, but you're not sure. And Health Canada doesn't let doctors know whether or not what their final decision about that was. They don't. If you file a report on drug A and subsequently because of a number of yours and a number of other reports and other evidence, things change with respect to drug A. You don't hear back individually.
Which itself might have been an incentive for the doctors to report, to at least get follow-up.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this is probably a reflection of the lack of resources that Health Canada gives to monitoring drug safety. So if you look at both personnel and money, the branch that approves new drugs gets about five times more money than the branch that monitors the safety, and it has about five times as many people.
I see. Their recommended two steps were reported in the Globe and Mail that were urged by the U.S. report were that consumer alerts be put on labels of all new drugs for a two-year period and mandatory reevaluations of new drugs within a five-year period. Was that the extent of the report's recommendations, or there were more?
Oh, there were a whole series of recommendations with regard to resources to the Food and Drug Administration with respect to getting authority to require post-marketing surveillance studies, with respect to forming partnerships with other organizations that have access to large databases that can be mined to look for
sharing
drug
information.
Reactions.
We have none of these recommendations in Canada, do we?
back in 2004, the federal and provincial ministers agreed to something called a national pharmaceutical strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the nine items in that strategy was real-world drug safety and effectiveness. In other words, how safe is the drug once it's actually out there on the market?
Right.
And there's been, for the past, about a year and a half, or a little under a year and a half, there's been a federal, provincial, territorial task force looking at the various parts of the national pharmaceutical strategy. And one of those task forces has been doing this real-world drug safety. There was a meeting in Ottawa about a year ago now to discuss this with a variety of stakeholders. And there is a coalition of Canadian researchers who have put together a proposal for funding, primarily in academic centers, funding people to examine drug safety, provide feedback to the government.
So there's an initiative in Canada for academic institutions to examine drug safety and feedback to the government, presumably as independent of the drug companies, although...
Yes.
Although the raising of university tuition fees and the crimp in assistance has brought the pharmaceutical companies further and further into academic institutions, hasn't it?
Well, the drug companies, and it's not just limited to the drug companies. I mean, universities are aggressively courting a variety of donors for things like funds for buildings, endowed shares, things like that. So the drug companies, though, I mean, do have an awful lot of money and may be willing to spend it, although within the universities, you would have to be very wary about conflicts of interest, especially with respect to testing of new drugs and things like that.
Well, I was thinking of Dr. Nancy Oliveri at SickKids, you know, as a prime example of the problem there.
Yeah. The Health Canada initiative, though, may go beyond academic institutions, but it's at this stage, there was just a progress report released, which didn't get an awful lot of publicity. About
when was it released?
Sometime last week.
Oh.
It was about a 30 or 40 page report looking at what was happening with the different aspects of the National Pharmaceutical Strategy.
Right.
Didn't get a lot of publicity, and if you read it carefully, you can't really figure out much of what's happening because it's all in pretty general terms.
Right.
And it's also, nobody's clear either how much priority the federal government is giving to this initiative.
Well, yeah, of course, because we're changing governments like hats lately. And, and I guess each government that comes up wins a minority, so they have to court popular issues rather than issues of conscience.
Certainly true. And this particular issue, there is the potential, at least, for a lot of conflict with the pharmaceutical industry, and I don't know who the companies give their money to in Canada, but it may be that they give to the Conservatives as opposed to give to the Liberals, in which case the Conservative, if that is the case, and as I said, I don't have any inside knowledge, but the government may be less inclined to confront the industry.
Yeah. You apparently published a research paper last year, which I'm sorry, I haven't had time to familiarize myself. But you surveyed 41 drugs withdrawn from the Canadian market from 63 to 2004.
That's right. This was not the original intent. I wanted to actually look at some other aspects of drugs that have been withdrawn. But when I sent Health Canada a Freedom of Information request asking for a list of products that have been removed from the market because of safety reasons, the answer that I got back was Health Canada has no such list.
Oh.
The way that Health Canada files information, it's by drug. So this was sort of a catch-22 situation. They could tell you, if you knew which drugs were withdrawn, they could give you information about why they were withdrawn, when they were withdrawn.
Yeah.
But you had no way of getting the names of the drugs because there was no comprehensive list.
Yeah.
So I used a variety of methods to create that list of 41 different products that I believe had been withdrawn, either ordered off the market by Health Canada or much more commonly removed by the companies, probably after negotiation with the government. Now, you know, that's not an awful lot of drugs compared to the number that are available, but some of the products that have been taken off the market were things that have been available for 30 or 40 years before the seriousness of the side effects were recognized.
Wow.
And other drugs that were removed were ones that had been prescribed to hundreds of thousands or more people per year.
Even though
small numbers came off the market, the impact of those drugs may have been much, much greater than just the absolute numbers suggest.
You're listening to RadioForAll.net while we take a short break from our interview. You've been listening to Professor Joel Lection explain the Canadian implications of drug safety following from a U.S. study, The Future of Drug Safety by the Institute of Medicine.
The article goes on to mention that drug reactions are not well studied. Is that a facet of the Health Canada report? Interactions as well as reactions.
Yeah, interactions are very difficult to figure out, especially as the population ages and people are taking more and more products. You get up a large percentage of the population that's over 65 or 70 maybe are taking 3-5 different products.
Yeah.
And if there's that raises the possibility for interactions. As the number of drugs you're taking goes up, so does the possibility that you're going to have an interaction. But trying to figure out how those 5 drugs are combining to produce an interaction is something that's extremely difficult. And I don't believe that Health Canada has any money at all to look at interactions in general. And most doctors, again, don't look for that kind of thing. It's
right.
Not something that's emphasized in medical school.
I see.
And you need, there are programs available you can put on palms if you think that something has happened.
Right.
But even those programs are not always completely accurate, and there's also an element of clinical judgment that you have to use to figure out, because not only are you dealing with drugs, but you're dealing with individuals who biochemistry and physiology, everybody is slightly different. So what may have produced an interaction in an 85-year-old with a variety of medical problems may not have produced an interaction in a 30-year-old who is otherwise healthy.
Yeah.
One of the problems that we have, and the Americans, and in fact most regulatory agencies, is that the pharmaceutical industry is contributing, well, here in Canada, about 50% of the cost of running the various parts of Health Canada that deal with prescription drugs.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah.
How do they contribute?
In the States, it's about the same. In other countries, it's
Through what mechanism? Through what mechanism do they contribute?
They pay fees for different things. If you have a submission for to get a new drug approved, you pay, I can't remember, I think it's about $175,000 or $180,000.
Right.
For every drug you have on the market, you pay a fee.
Right.
There's a fee that you pay that goes towards the cost of inspecting manufacturing plants to make sure that they're observing high-quality standards.
Mm-hmm.
But that money means that, to a certain extent, that although it's not formal in Canada, there is a quid pro quo,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that the industry is primarily concerned with getting drugs approved faster.
Right.
Because that's what makes them money.
Mm.
And Health Canada, to a large extent, has gone along with that
agenda.
With that agenda, and you can see that in terms of the amount of money that goes into approving drugs versus the amount that goes into monitoring drug safety. I and a number of other people have argued that the money to deal with drugs should come out of the public treasury,
mm-hmm.
not from the drug companies. And that recommendation was more or less what was in the Romano report that was reached a couple of years ago. Romano didn't specifically exclude getting money from the drug companies, but he recommended a firewall be created such that there would be no possibility that the companies could influence the priorities or decisions of the agency. So tying your budget to a certain extent to what you get from the industry can create significant problems.
So addressing this problem for the public in part consists of asking politicians for the solution to it.
It does. Right now, because of the amount of money that comes from the companies and the fact that the approval process is very non-transparent,
yeah.
there's a perception, whether or not it's true, that that approvals often are done without due regard to evidence around safety and effectiveness. Now
in other words, they're closing the barn door after the horse is bolted?
Yeah. The perception may not be true.
Right.
But you've got circumstances create the conditions for people to become very cynical. So, you know, getting a lot of your money and you're not showing us what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that the only solution to this problem, is more money?
No. I mean, you also need to give Health Canada the authority to require companies to do post-marketing studies,
mm-hmm.
or even better, I would say, is that those studies, the companies can pay for them, but they should be done independently of the companies.
Right.
So that the companies would give money to maybe something like the Canadian Institutes for Health Research, which would then call for different organizations who want to do this, to do the study, to submit bids, and they would select the organization that they think is best qualified,
mm-hmm.
so that although the drug companies would be paying, they would have nothing to do with the study.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things. One of the recommendations in the Institute of Medicine report on the FDA about this five-year license renewal, is
mm-hmm.
a good idea. That's already being done in the European Union,
yeah.
that at a five-year period, they re-examine the evidence for the drugs.
I see. Who keeps the evidence? Is this filed by physicians, or is this...
No, this is stuff companies are required to submit what are called periodic safety reports.
Uh-huh.
And it depends. I think it's within the first 2 years, you have to do it quarterly, and then from 2 to 5 years, you have to do it every 6 months.
And the license hangs fire at 5 years.
Well, it's not clear how aggressive the regulatory agency in the European Union is going to be in doing these reviews, but there certainly is the possibility that they could be aggressive about it.
So this plan hasn't been enforced for 5 years yet?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, okay. But you think it's a path we could follow?
Yes, and there are a number of other things that you can do. So Health Canada currently has not even bothered to study the effectiveness of the warnings that it posts on its website or the letters that it sends out to doctors about new safety issues. We don't have any idea how effective these things are.
Mm-hmm.
They have to start looking at that so that they can come up with strategies to inform people, the public in general, and doctors about emerging safety issues. There are no formal requirements from anybody that the sales representatives who doctors see have to tell them about new safety issues.
Oh.
That could be made a requirement. The ads in medical journals, while they're better than they were 5 years ago, the detailed safety information is still put in about 8-point print at the back of the journal, far removed from the pictures and the large print.
Yeah.
Although in the U.S., for what it's worth, the detailed information has to be contiguous with the pictures.
Oh, so in the U.S. journal
it
is.
It's still in small print, and whether or not anybody reads it is another thing, but at least it's easily found.
Okay.
So that can be done. Health Canada could certainly do much more to encourage doctors and the general public to report suspected adverse drug reactions.
Yeah, what could you do to make it worthwhile for physicians to do this?
Well, as I said, I think that doctors should do it because it's part of practicing good medicine.
Yes.
But I think that if you gave them feedback about what they reported, if you made it easy to do the reports. Now, they just have started to allow web-based reporting, but I would guess that most doctors wouldn't know that web-based reporting is allowed or know where the website is.
Right.
So simplifying reporting, I think that the Health Canada should be much more aggressive about talking to doctors about reporting adverse drug reactions. Out of one of the universities in the UK, what they do is they get the names of about the first 10,000 people who get a new drug, and they also get the names of the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a period of time, 6 months or something, they write to these doctors who've written prescriptions and ask them if they've noticed anything unusual in the patients.
Really?
Who got the prescriptions.
So the civil service does this as a matter of course?
No, not the civil service. This is done, there's a special unit that was originally set up in one of the universities that does this.
Okay.
And we could do that also. With respect for privacy issues, we could set up registries of people who get new drugs, especially vulnerable populations, so elderly people, women who are pregnant, children,
people with disabilities.
People who are much more at risk of drug side effects. We could set up registries so that we could monitor, know who got drugs and that we think may pose problems in the future, and then we could monitor what's happening to those people. Are they ending up going to hospital? Is there a higher death rate amongst them?
Mm-hmm.
So that could be done, too.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of different things besides just money issues that could be undertaken by, Health Canada specifically, or money could be made available for other things.
So presumably the baby boom, with their numbers, as they age and they come into contact more and more with the medical system, are the ones with the clout to bring this about, but they have to decide that it's important to them.
Yes, they do. It's going to be very interesting because there will be a large number of people taking a lot of drugs in the next 10 or 15 years as the baby boomers go over 65 and start to get the illnesses that are associated more with old age.
Right.
And that may be a big impetus to improve what we've got currently, mm-hmm. although I would certainly like to see it before that happens. The government doesn't really seem to want to make this a priority. Some of these issues were raised in a report that was released about 3 years ago now by the Standing Committee of the House of Commons on Health.
Mm-hmm.
They issued a report called Out of the Medicine Cabinet, and they pointed out problems with drug safety, but there didn't seem to be any particular political will to act on what was in that report.
Hmm. Maybe when politicians reach that age.
That might be.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate your time, especially out of your personal time in the evening to talk to us about this.
All right. Well, thank you for your interest.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Professor Joel Lection explain the Canadian implications of drug safety following from a U.S. study, The Future of Drug Safety by the Institute of Medicine. In the middle of the show, you heard Mary Lou Williams and Mary's Boogie Woogie. At the end of the show, Albert Ammons. Shout for joy. You can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number 4, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.